And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
That was a pretty satisfying win, I think.
It was, and we should just at the outset explain that we're recording on a Thursday because you've been in the health and safety protocols, Nick.
Yep.
So
podcasters have protocols too.
If you need to rest your voice and not talk too much, that's fine. Just like send me a signal on our chat and I'll just talk about rucks for 5 minutes. It'll be fine. I've got you.
our usual emergency protocol.
Anyway, good to have you online and looking forward. I agree. This was, and I completely agree, Nick. This was a really fun game. It was the strongest point. I went to the game with a few lovely people, but afterwards, it was high scoring. The game was essentially in the second quarter, the rising star, Bolton took over and you know, was involved in almost every goal, had 12 touches. And in the third quarter, the old bull, Dusty, took over and was the dominant force on the ground. And else you think about the game, it was a really fun Saturday afternoon spectacle. And nothing lasts forever, and it's important to appreciate these games when they come.
No, I did have a certain sense of deja vu that we'd sort of done this game before, and then I checked, and yeah, we've done this game actually quite a lot. So since you know, the modern Richmond era, since the start of 2017, excluding COVID games with no crowds, we'd played Hawthorn 6 times for 6 wins, with margins ranging between 2 and 6 goals. So this was just absolutely to current Richmond form, where we certainly win and we certainly felt like the better team, and they were on unexpected shots. They were a couple of goals worse, but you know, yeah, that it was competitive without being too tense.
I think the plus 21 inside 50s is probably the telling statistic there about the general play. Look,
I thought our preview of actually held up really well. That their Hawthorn's weakness in midfield and clearances versus their ability to transition the ball and the sort of the ebb and flow of their strengths and weaknesses and how we responded to them actually was a fair bit of the story of the first half.
Yeah, and look, it's been in the media ad infinitum this week, so it's hardly an original insight, but one thing that was also clear, we're the 18th team in the league at the moment for defending forward entries, and we did get shredded a bit in the back 50.
Yeah, and that wasn't great.
And that was definitely the reason. Even when we were behind, I remember checking, when we were well behind, we were still up on the inside 50s in the second quarter. So it was really, they weren't giving us trouble because of the midfield. They were giving us trouble exactly because of what you said of their efficiency and effectiveness in ball movement. But it's a hard field to play against us, and we eventually ground them out. I was actually, even when we were 4 goals down, I was never particularly nervous. Nick, do you know what else this is for the first time since we've been doing the podcast?
Ooh, I don't know.
We are first in the AFL in hit-out differential.
Well, Nank was got 5 votes from both coaches, and Soldo would have caused heart failure for you if he'd nailed that shot in the last quarter. So, yeah, look, at Nankdo had a pretty good day.
Oh, Nankdo had an awesome day. And so, you know, Soldo had 2 goals and actually had more hit-outs to advantage, which was a lot, 8, than Nank did. But it's 3 goals in a row, 3 games in a row where we've been at least 3-1 or better on the hit-outs and the hit-outs to advantages.
Well, and another game where the hit-outs stats would have been slightly off because our rucks got to the stage where they were just grabbing the ball out of the air. Bothering to tap it.
Nank did a couple of amazing things, like grabbing the ball out of the centre square on a ruck tap where you've got the knee raised and like he jumped in the air, marked it, and then kicked it as he landed. He's a very coordinated lad for 199 centimeters. Anyway, I have more analysis about the ruck, but I don't want to distract us too much early on.
Speaking of extremely coordinated 199-centimetre individuals, Tom Lynch has destroyed $9 million worth of defenders in the last 2 weeks.
Nice stat.
He just looks great. Like, silly. Sicily wasn't disgraced, and yet he was kind of dominated.
Is there some sort of galaxy brain reason, the sort of part of the influence on the new coaching is that why we aren't defending the back line better, but Tom Lynch is incredibly effective, or are those things, do you think, completely unrelated? I can't have a theory. It was just something that came to me.
I don't know.
But let's be honest, it is slightly, we all have a high respect for Tommy Lynch and we think he's very good, but I don't think any of us would have quite predicted, you know, this level of performance. Like, you know, beating up on the West Coast Eagles, fine. But then he's beating up on, as you point out, very good defenders week after week.
Look, he's fit, he's in form, and he's getting the ball delivered to him to advantage. And I think that third part sort of tells a fair bit of the story for both our defence and our attack, the extent to which there's pressure on the ball carrier as it's coming in.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's just, you know, it's not like he was playing on a bad team for the last few years, aside from last year. Like, he's been relatively fit. It's just, we can analyze further in future weeks, but if this run of form continues, but, you know, it's at the moment, it's, you know, by far Richmond career best, and really career best when you consider that the Gold Coast was a very different operating environment.
Yeah, definitely so. What do you think of Biggie Newman?
So he was fine. Obviously, he had that one bad moment with Lynch.
Sadly dropped.
Yeah, there is a moment to him where, and maybe it's just callousness of youth, and he is younger, so it's not the same. But Hiram, like, he's a little bit Ben Millerish in that.
Well, you know, they're both super athletic converted ruckmen.
Yeah, and roughly the same. So they're within 2 centimeters of each other, correct?
Yep.
And they won't lose. Like, if the contest is there to be killed and they've got a decent shot at it, they will kill it. They'll get their fist on it, but they're not interceptors, and they're not going the extra mile. They're not doing, and then they're not amazing with the ball. I thought Biggie did one or two creative things that I haven't seen from Ben Miller. So,
yeah,
you know,
Biggie, look, Miller actually had a great game in the VFL this week, but
he did, yeah.
Biggie's been a much more consistent ball winner in the VFL, and not a bad distributor either.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm saying is, and it's only one game, he needs to start intercepting a bit to get us a bit more excited.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair. But it was a respectable first game. At completely the other end of the spectrum, you look at Jack Rewalt's stats, and yeah, it's impossible to see any sign of decline.
No, absolutely, and he just the forward line, and maybe it's got to do with Lynch playing so well. It is working superbly. So it's lovely to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, look, the forward line, despite sort of all the marking forwards were fantastic, and Shea, as you mentioned, was great. But yeah, and look, Morris Rioli Jr. contributed while being quiet, and George almost wasn't cited except for the extremely George goal in the last 2 minutes.
I almost thought that moment was peak George, having basically done nothing. He had one touch at halftime, and he'd been just, you know, just, no. He wouldn't. There's actually a beautiful picture of Soldo's towering mark, and George is such a spud. He was looking in the wrong direction and missed that moment of brilliance. I jest, of course. But and then, of course, having had a shocking George goal game, he then has this moment of weird individual pressure brilliance that wins that seals the game. So,
on the second attempt.
Yes, I will say this: Morris had one effective possession for the whole game. And it was probably the best one effective possession game that you can have.
Yeah.
For what that's worth.
You can tell there's some footsteps going on with Hawthorn players. People are definitely aware of his closing speed.
Oh, God, I was furious at both him and Soldo for, was it Frost they missed in the centre of the ground?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so annoyed at that. I've got two bad things to say about Soldo, but we'll save that. So yeah, I know unusual things. Maybe it's because after he kicks two goals, I feel a bit more comfortable. For the benefit of the listeners, I did say to you before this that because we're recording this on a Thursday, I want us to be more succinct than usual and not talk about less players and only the interesting ones. And I suspect I'm going to fail in that, and we're going to wind up talking about 4/5 of the team. One thing I'm really liking about Shorty's game, and obviously his stats are up, his meter gains is sustaining, even though he's playing in midfield role, which is harder. The AFL rankings are loving him because he's getting more contested ball, he's getting ball in more meaningful places that more likely to lead to scoring. But one thing just on the eye test, Shorty's tackling is the best I've ever seen it. Like he really tackles hard, and I was sort of reflecting in that it's a tribute to coaching that guys at his age are showing obvious improvement in aspects of their game. So look, he continues to play well. It's going to be a really interesting when we start to play in a few better midfields, because there's a few things that's been happening in the last few weeks. Just to transition to the rucks, we've been playing crap ruckman, and we've just been beating them down with two rucks, both of whom are better than their first ruck. And we've done that 3 weeks in a row now. And the Essendon ruck is, they have two, well, last week they played two semi-spuds, but they're both decent in the ruck contest. So it'll be interesting whether, and they have, believe it or not, they have some semi-competent mids. So if we can sustain this sort of level of dominance in the clearance that we have been, dominance in contested possession, in against Essendon, that would be actually quite a meaningful side. Believe it or not, even though we're talking about it, Essendon, who aren't exactly, they're not the 1985 Chicago Bears, but they are actually, they have a better midfield than the teams we've been playing recently.
No, they're a good ball winning midfield.
Exactly.
In particular. Yeah.
But yeah, that'll be really interesting for Jane Short, because the experiment thus far is going gangbusters. And the two ruck experiment is going really well. And Soldo this week played less than 50% of game time, but when he was on, he was incredibly, impactful. Mm. As I said, he actually had more meaningful ruck taps than Nank. He kicked the two goals, should have taken a third. The one thing he is not, so I'll get it out of the way now. And I think it makes sense because it's how they're all coached now and he's fast. But the few times he's running off for getting for a hand pass receive, and mate, just go to Shepherd.
Yeah. Stick to your lane.
Yeah, like you're there to contest the ruck contest, throw your big body around and contest the odd marking contest in the forward line, and we know you'll kick it. I can see why he's coached to do that and why you want to have confidence, but anyway, it is not my construction. It's not my dominant construction of ruculinity, if you understand what I mean.
Someone who's going well is Dan Rioli, but I also think this game sort of also highlighted sort of the next step for him becoming a really well-rounded, high-level halfback flanker is the one-on-one aerial stuff, because Luke Bruce has made any number of defenders look bad in that respect. But yeah, I think it's appropriate to be really pleased with how his transition to the back line has gone, but it's also fair to say that there's still some work to go.
Yeah, he had some defensive struggles. Two things, Nick, I just want to... So I completely agree, as much as I'm enjoying... I'm an unabashed fan of Dan's work off halfback. Two things I just wanted... I already mentioned Bolton's second quarter. He had 12 touches in the second quarter after one first. But for those who watched the presser, you probably saw that Dimmer was effusive on Shea's defensive work. Well, that was partly because, the evidence is there. He had 7 tackles and 45 pressure points, which was the second highest on Richmond. Yeah, it was, which is unusual for him. So very impressive. And Baker, back in his very comfortable hybrid role, had 12 contested possessions and 24 overall. So he's found his feet again in probably his first and best position.
Oh, look, I don't want to have to choose between the two. I think you just always get Liam Baker, quality footballer, whichever end of the ground he's playing at. I actually don't have a great deal more notes.
No, that's it. I'm done. Let's stick to it. We had an objection to be brief, but I think we've... The key point, sort of the most important point is the... it was beautiful. It was actually really fun football, and I think we need to, after all our success, we need to stop and smell the roses. But Nick, we've got so much more to talk about because, and full apologies to listeners. We did intend to do it last week, but we omitted
well,
to.
We had 2 items we forgot to do.
Yeah, that's what I was about to mention. Both of them, the AFLW Best and Fairest, which is obviously exciting because it's the one time of the year where you get the coach's honest opinion of the players, and Josh Caddy's retirement. Why don't we start with the AFLW Best and Fairest, Nick? Because one of your many value adds to this podcast is your annual calculation of the votes per game, which is also which you do. Do you do that in your head?
Yeah, mostly.
Yeah. Anyway, so you check our Twitter account, you can see Nick's working.
This one actually, yeah, I did. I mean, then. Yeah, it's harder with the men when you're, because the women only play 10 games. It's a much easier calculation than dividing 22.
or even 17 is not an easy thing to divide by. But part of the reason, let's be perfectly honest, is the Richmond Best and Fairest is the least interesting competition.
the world.
Yes. It is so going to be named after her when she goes, she retires. But yeah, so lay down victory in the raw votes and because she only missed one game, but as you'd expect in the votes per game.
No, she was... The only very minor.
She played every game. My apologies.
Oh no, yeah, she. Miller was second.
No, I thought that was a story. Don't brush over that. Like she had a really she had an excellent season.
She did. And at the start of the season when Harriet Cordner was probably the leader of the defence. And then she went down with a serious knee injury 3 games into the season. And yeah, she really grew into the role.
Yeah, she did indeed. And I really enjoyed watching her play.
Yeah. Look, another story. Look, she was third in aggregate votes and fourth in votes per game, but Gabby Seymour, yeah, very good.
Nick's cough button fails to function, also mentioning that Brennan was third, as you'd expect, as a sort of the superstar and much celebrated. Tess Slavey was, I thought. was surprisingly, I didn't realize she'd come up fifth. The Hosking sisters are ridiculous. Now, like, it's no surprise because they both played the same amount of games, but they had the same amount of votes.
I know.
So it equals sixth.
And the same amount of votes per game. Like, yes. It's just great. Look, Tessa Levy, I think, is a real development success story. I mean, we had Sarah Black on the show saying when she was drafted there were a few eyebrows raised, but no, she is genuinely one of our better players. Ellie McKenzie finished eighth, despite...
Not bad, all things considered.
Yeah, and a late and quiet start to the season.
Yeah, so was there anyone... you see, probably didn't do quite as well as I expected, but that was, you know, I guess that's the role of the goal-kicking forward. You tend to remember their good moments, and it's a notoriously high variance. Maddie Brand Castellano was respectable. Came 10th,
yeah.
10th votes per game.
Speaking the other younger Lynch, I think I honestly didn't realise she played every game, but yeah, she was a solid contributor. Oh, actually, and another one, Maddie Shevlin, had just probably better second half of the season than first, but yeah. Really, really solid effort coming over from Colin.
Yeah, well said. So all in all, I wouldn't say no huge surprises in there, but always good to see the honest opinion and the announcements today. I mean, we knew the season was starting anyway in late August, but definitely, and I think thus far, by not going backwards, our team has probably gone forwards.
No, the only confirm, so the sign and trade period for the expansion teams starts next week, and then the week after it's sort of normal trade season with a late June draft, I think I saw. But yeah, the only departures already well known with Akek Makuchuk, confirmed to be going to Hawthorne, but yeah,
I think she's a pretty good chance to be delisted anyway. So good for her.
Yeah, she wasn't a regular senior player this past season. So yeah,
it's all good.
Obviously, there's a fair way to go, and we're apparently getting Grace Egan over from Carlton, so it's sort of net positive so far. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, we'll talk about it more when things actually happen. But Nick, the other big news was Josh Caddy retired.
I know, and I do have very mixed feelings about the players retiring for the mid-season draft. Like, it's still so early in the season. But yeah. Josh, you know, he's a pretty unique character, Josh Caddy, but yeah, he's a lot to be proud of.
I mean, he does. He's given us a lot of joy through his trash talking. I think he's a personality, but, you know, I don't think he comes up in the list of the highest footballers when we have that sort of discussion every few years about which Richmond football we'd most like to have a beer with. I'm not sure he was always the first chosen. But I think the thing I would like not to forget is even in 2019, he played 18 games. So, yep. You know, he was good very recently. And it just, and it's funny as you sort of, like, I watched him in a preseason game this year, I think, and he just looked so slow and behind the pace.
I know. The transition to midfield was tough for him when, ironically, he came over from Geelong with the premise of more midfield time and arrived at Richmond, and what we needed was a forward. And, you know, there's a very noticeable pre-Tom Lynch and after-Tom Lynch split with Josh's career. Before Lynch arrives, he plays 44 games for Richmond for 67 goals. After that, 35 games for 21 goals. Like, He had to, he had to move back into the midfield maybe when the games got faster and he's maybe lost a step. He didn't have to lose. And, yeah, but, he, as you said, play key figure in 2017, kicks the first goal in that grand final, which I don't think any of us will forget, reinvents himself for 2019, and then is an emergency for the whole finals series in 2020, which can't have been easy.
No, absolutely not. But, he'll leave us with, he'll always be welcome in Richmond circles. He'll leave us with those two flags. So,
and some awesome trash talking. Like,
oh yeah,
and the list of Richmond players better at sledging than Josh in the modern era would be very low, I think.
Absolutely. And look, it goes to the theme of the show this week is enjoy it while it lasts, because he gave us a lot of good times and that they should be appreciated.
Yeah.
Nick, before we move...
Well, but we should also appreciate he was part of that amazing off-season in 2016. So he comes to a club towards the bottom of the ladder, seemingly going nowhere, and when he retires 6 years later, they've won more than 70% of the games that he's played in. That's a lot to be proud of.
Exactly. Now, Nick, before we get to Essendon, speaking of clubs that I hope they appreciated their glory years, because the downtimes can be long, there was a slightly disappointing VFL match on the weekend too. And so I'll keep going. That was normally when you jump in, but I appreciate that might be struggling with the...
I was actually talking then, but yeah. Still on mute, sorry.
All good. So obviously we're doing well, but we collapsed late in the game and sort of recorded a comfortable loss. A few standouts, our best position winners were... there's a clear standout, which is Ben Miller getting 23... touches and one goal, which is, I believe, by far his career high in VFL.
Yeah, and look, from the early years of his career, that's about a month's worth of work for him, and certainly it's his first VFL goal in the past 2 years. Well, 3 years, because there wasn't a 2019 season. But yeah, no, really, really good effort. Thompson Dow, 11 clearances, seven inside 50s is some pretty yeoman's work. Jack Ross, also pretty solid. Hugo Ralph-Smith came back and was good, maybe if not great. I was a little surprised he wasn't part of the squad this week, actually.
I don't think the zero tackles helped his case.
No. I mean, he's not a monster tackle winner. Interestingly, for someone who got he didn't win a ton of ball, but Judson Clark had 14 disposals, but coaches talked up his ball use. But yeah, he's got named as an emergency this week.
Well, he's got to be close, right? He is one or two more bad George games away from playing. Also, I will say on the...
Wouldn't you also consider Noah Cumberland for George's position?
Because he just keeps kicking goals. He's ridiculously productive. Three again. So I did actually check that George is having a better season than his previous two seasons.
Yeah. This week, not being a standout, but... Yeah.
Like, there's a clear last 2 years of. There was a clear before the last 2 years, his form line is clearly better. And he's this year is not as good as prior to that, in 19 and 18 and 17. But it's better than it has been. So I guess maybe Dimmer will run out of patience, but what I guess what I'm saying is he's gone through. Dimmer has forgiven George for worse form than this.
Yes, but he did get dropped at the end of last year when sort of we'd spent seemingly years talking about his place in the team being under question, and him not being dropped. But yeah,
no, not seemingly. It was literally. We talked about it all the time. I think we talked about it in 2017.
It was the only. I remember it as the only selection question throughout the whole 2017 final series. What a complete waste of time that was.
Yeah, well, we had to talk about something, didn't we? While we're giddily high-fiving each other.
Box Hill tagged Tyler Sonsi, which is interesting.
Might have been a bit of...
Mark of respect, maybe?
Or a mark of revenge.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Sonsi played with him last year.
Yeah, apparently slightly unhappily, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Samson Ryan is going pretty well as a ruckman.
Yeah, I was actually going to mention that. We were 2-1 in the hitouts. He was fine in the stats, and Miller's not doing any second racking. We've got a VFL bloke doing the second racking, so it's basically all on Ryan. And yeah, he's doing. He's showing some promise.
Yeah. Robbie Tarrant, 10 possessions to half time, then pulled out of the game to manage him and maybe to transition to Essendon. I think it's quite possible he's been picked this week to replace Noah Bolter and in particular to play on Peter Wright.
Yeah, that makes complete sense, Ryan. Actually, and you know, I hate doing this, but someone called Dan Flitton pointed this out this morning that without Tarrant, we do look pretty small down back against Peter Wright. And yeah, Tarrant's injury is a mystery to us all, but whatever it is, let's hope that his resting time has improved his form because we'll need him this week.
Yeah, definitely so. Bolter's hamstring started the week, you know, at the game didn't seem too serious. Early in the week was mentioned as being medium term.
Oh no, it was really bad, Nick.
Was it?
I don't know. I don't know what they showed on the TV, but
because the commentators definitely downplayed it when he first went off.
Oh, he could not walk. Like he hopped off the field. He hopped 40 meters off the field. Like the only reason he could get off was he's such a ridiculously good athlete. He was doing some super athletic hopping. He couldn't put any weight on it at all. Like that's a bad hamstring because hamstrings don't have that effect unless they're really bad. I think it was high. I think he's going to be, you know, if he comes back, I've heard after the bye, and that would be a great result because it's only two games, games, three weeks in practice. No, he was definitely gone. I can't see how because he went off in front of the commentary box. I can't see how they could think that because, yeah, it was just
shoulder shrug.
Yeah. Now, Nick, we're burying the lead here. No, I'm a bit upset. Look, if you haven't, at the end of this podcast, just clear your schedule, get off and download Footyology, the Rowan Connolly podcast, where he reacts to the re-signing of the Essendon CEO. And it is fascinating listening. He's just melting down and they both, one's an Essendon fan, Robert Shaw, who worked for Essendon for a while. They're both just melting down with fury about what's happening in Essendon. And most of it's pretty vague and unspecific. Like it's about culture and not listening to the fans and they don't give a stuff. And it is a reminder. And I'm sort of a little part of, you know, if we hadn't had the massive turnaround in 2017 and things had stayed bad, like we are very lucky that Richmond has a good membership. But if your team, leadership. But if your team's crap in the AFL, they are like they're nominally democracies. But the way the voting system works, it's very difficult to get outsiders in there. And if you feel that your club has been taken over, which Rowan clearly feels very passionately, and he uses quite negative language by people who don't have the best interests of the club in the heart. You can feel very disempowered because there's very little you can do about it, and even though they're normally, and Rowan's just, he's so angry at the club. And, you know, he's obviously been an experienced football journalist. He's been around, and Robert Shaw is an experienced football operator. And it's just, it is fascinating listening. But, you know, there by the grace of God go us. But, yeah, just it's interesting how, like, it's really dark in Essendon world at the moment. Doesn't mean the players won't get up this week. But
I've almost sort of wanted to say, look, just pump the brakes a bit, guys. Just let them, you know, slide along through another week. Let's not have all this scrutiny and pressure that might make them respond. Like, we just want another apathetic effort. And a comfortable win, thanks very much.
Yeah, no, oh, absolutely. Like, the heat is really on. I should also say, on Rowan Connolly's rage, like, I haven't been that angry at the club since they picked Steve Morris as a defensive forward 4 weeks in a row. Swings and roundabouts. But yeah. The pressure is right on. Look, I don't know, like, I don't actually believe in that narrative that much. I think it comes a few times, but they've been under pressure so many times this year, and they don't have a lot of. They've got Dev Smith coming back, good player, but they don't have enough. There's not anything that shows that there's going to be systemic change. The thing that does worry me a bit was the thing that we're talking about before, is that their midfield is competent.
Yeah, Darcy Parrish is literally the number one ball winner in the AFL. And wins a ton of both contested and uncontested ball. He's the problem, and has played well against us before. Look, there are other midfielders. They're not going to overwhelm you, but as a group, they do win quite a lot of football. And interestingly, something that Essendon give up very few. Turnovers, like they play a less direct style of football than we do. So while, you know, they don't concede, you know, they don't cough the ball up much, and they can retain possession for a fair bit of time, but they're 18th in tackles. So I think, you know, there's a lot of a similar game plan for us in making the game manic and a bit messy, and we play at a high pace, and we make their defensive system break down, because as we've seen, it has been vulnerable.
Absolutely. Well, they've got systemic errors all over the place, but you know, the flip side is, We are 16th on defending, 18th on defending entries, 16th on defending defending clearances once we've lost them. So there's a path for potential there. It is fascinating. Perhaps fascinating only to me. Essendon do have competent rucks. They don't. They're hilariously crap around the ground. Nank's going to destroy his opponent around the ground, but. You know, they will not be. They will be.
Draper's a big athletic boy.
He is, but I think he got 4 touches last week.
Yep.
But yeah, like, he's very. I think Essendon are 4th in hitouts, hitout ratio, hitout differential. So they'll be all right. So this will be a test for the 2 ruck strategy, which is interesting to me, perhaps not to anyone else. But we've had 3 weeks of 3 weeks of beating up on marshmallows, and you know, now is this test. So, Nico, I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be a fascinating game. Some people will be on their phones checking up for the election updates at the same time. But I think this is if you're a Richmond fan, 6-4, once you. Well, right now, 6-4. Right now, we get up to 7-4. It's actually a crucial game in the season.
Well, yeah, and we're 25-point favourites, so it's, you know, it's pretty embarrassing if we lose. Frankly, one thing to look at, Ben Hobbs, who we discussed on our pre-draft show, and has come out since Richmond liked him at number nine, but, you know, liked Josh Gibkiss better. But apparently we tried to trade up from 17 to get him, but he was drafted by Essendon at 14. And, yeah, he's had some nice moments the last couple of weeks.
Looks like such a good draft, doesn't it?
Yes, not enormous, more so for the quality of the players who've played so far rather than the quantity, if you know what I mean. It's not an enormous draft class in terms of number of people playing, but yeah, the ones that are certainly looking good. I am, as always, amused by Carolyn Wilson taking shots at other teams, but she's mentioned several clubs in the past 2 weeks who should have drafted Josh Gibkiss instead of who they did pick in last year's draft.
Yeah, that it's pretty brave publicly making those kind of calls this early out.
Yeah,
but
it's really early.
But that's part of her shtick, right? She doesn't give a damn.
Yeah, I'm amused that somebody else is doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Nick, there's one issue. You've been great with your slightly fragile voice. You've done very, very well to get through the podcast thus far, aside from the old cough, so you're doing very well. But we said we're going to talk about, Nick, the dusty issue. And I'll just say from the outset, when it first got raised in inkling, and by the way, it does rather seem like Ralph, or at least someone very close to Ralph, is leaking at least some of these stories that is encouraging. Yeah.
It's certainly not coming from Dusty. And
well, nothing comes from Dusty, and that's part of the problem. But Dusty's camp is loose, and it's a clown show, and we've been here twice before. But the thing I was just going to say, just to set up this discussion, was when it first came out, I thought, oh, this would be interesting because we can continue the Josh Green conversation. And, you know, now that Dusty's playing, would you trade for him? And then Tom Green. And then after about 4 or 5 days of it, and if you live in Melbourne, like, it's on the front page so often, and there's so many articles written about
it. So much of it is so clickbaity.
I'm just so, like, it's so, I'm so sick of it. It was interesting podcast fodder in my mind for about 24 hours, and now it's just here forever. But we should address it. And I did want to make that point that it's not all, some people that Dusty has chosen to be his man, to be in his camp, are clearly leaking. Like, there was a story in the Herald Sun which has clearly been dropped by Josh Carr, where you can see the bit where Josh is saying, this is what I say. Ralph. Bloody hell, I'm just on disaster tonight. Anyway, Ralph is saying this, and then someone close to Ralph Carr said that he's in secret talks with Sydney, and Ralph Carr's been quoted in the previous paragraph, so, like, you can clearly say this is the bit where Ralph Carr says off the record. That kind of stuff's just painful, and we've been here before. And, like, this is a choice that Dusty has made, as much as we love him.
I know. And what good does it do him as well to have this speculation?
I don't think it's artful on his... you know, I don't think he's playing 4D chess. I think this is just the people he's trusted to do this, and this is how the people he's trusted to do this think that this is done. But... I don't think this is actually very much in his interest. But anyway, thank you for listening to me complain about that.
It is worth noting on this front that it is, you know, Dusty has been very loyal to Ralph Carr despite, you know, the debacle of him, a clearly disinterested Dusty, touring the GWS facility at the end of 2014 despite not wanting to be there. And then him nearly going to North Melbourne at the end of 2017, which in retrospect would have just destroyed a lot of his public profile as an AFL player. It certainly would have been the last time he played finals on the MCG. So,
True. I mean, that one's not on Ralph. Like, it was messy, but Ralph probably wanted to play him at Richmond because Ralph gets a higher proportion of endorsements than he does from salary. Mm. So if you're the manager, you always want your client to go to the high profile club, the higher profile club, and make the money back with endorsements. But the thing, I guess, the one interesting question before, when this all started, I wanted to ask you about, you know, to complete the Tom Green conversation. We said, you know, who in Richmond would you trade for? Oh. Is there anyone in Richmond? Would you trade Dusty Head up for Tom Green?
I can't see GWS happening as much as they desperately need it. Like, they have got the worst long-term salary cap situation in the AFL with the amount of money tied up in guys like Whitfield and Canelio and their actual good players. Like, it's a really tricky fit. Like, I think the discussion does have to go back to Sydney because they've got a bit more wiggle room with Franklin coming off the books. But I don't know. Like, I like to think I have a pretty well-calibrated sense of trade values and stuff, but I just don't think it's almost impossible to do that with such an unprecedented player like Dusty. So, I don't know. I think there's a lot to go on this story. I don't know. You know, we all want the best for Dusty. You know, and who knows how that will play out. I don't know. Explaining it to my kids would be extremely difficult.
Yeah, I think it's
like,
a very...
Like Santa is fake level difficult.
True. Maybe if Santa was fake, but if Santa, like, every November sort of made you go through a few weeks of guessing whether Christmas was actually going to happen. It's a very illiquid market, right? And he's got a top five salary in the AFL, yeah. And he's not out of contract, so it's a very difficult asset to, as, and this has been in the media, it's not equivalent to the Franklin situation because Franklin was a free agent.
Or the
Tom Lynch situation, yeah. who has a roughly comparable per year salary to Dusty.
Tony Lockett moved, he was out of contract. Like the...
Yeah, because and that way the receiving club is because it's not as much cost for the receiving club, and they have to.
Yeah, it is very superstars trades when they're under contract are extremely uncommon.
Yeah, so look, I think there's both an open-mindedness that you know Dusty's brilliant this year, and whatever happens, we keep him for this year, and that's a really important point because if this was the NBA, you'd trade him straight away. But like every year has real value, so. Time has a value, so
we're a good team. Our forward line looks great. Let it roll.
Exactly, let it roll. And at the end of the year, like things might change, but this is when we look back on the Dustin Martin experience, which hopefully will be four or five flags, and you know the best Richmond final. The best AFL finals player ever, perhaps. This will be the one thing I can go, that's the one thing I don't miss is this kind of crap. We'll see how it plays out. And the Dustin Martin media speculation industrial military complex will continue.
It's going to be exhausting. But yeah, I think that's exactly right. We just enjoy every week of it because it's fantastic. He is a sight to behold.
Oh, Nick, it was that goal he almost kicked to the city end where he missed two and then just the Bernardin curve back. Like, it's special times. I appreciate every one of those.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.
We're Richmond Tigers.
It starts with a vision. If we're not locked into that, might as well pack up and go home.
Talking about three flags by 2020.
Fitzroy has played in more finals than you guys.
And after 13 straight losses, the Tigers are no longer toothless. Their first win for 2010. Carmichael Hunt. Took it, Jeffrey. He does. Carlton are on their way to Sydney.
West on to kick a goal from here. He does. What a start. Can he just... preliminary final in 16 long years, and they have done it. They've won. The Tigers are into the prelim.
Go Tigers.